1930s, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt addressed the nation through a series of radio broadcasts known as the Fireside Chats. His aim was to reassure the common man that our society would recover from its troubled times. But we're far from 1930, and I deal with a different kind of far. For a new era of worldly frustration, we offer a fresh conversation. I'm Greg Carlwood, and these are the Fireside Chats.
Hello, hello, Higher Side Chatters. Welcome to the goddamn show. Smoking a little smoke and drinking a little drink, which is definitely recommended for the weirdness we got today. I am Greg Carlwood from sunny San Diego, and we're going to examine a specific case of human-alien contact known to the deep-level black budget groups as Project Serpo. It's a bit of a funny thing because in vague terms, a lot of people will be pretty accepting of the idea that we visited with aliens or that aliens have visited us. But when you get into a story of such detail, people start to get pretty skeptical, and I cannot blame anybody for that. But there's a lot of talk out there about this type of meeting, so some story has to be true. And the only information that really seems to suggest that the Project Serpo story isn't legitimate seems to be rooted in a forum board war, where one forum tries to discredit the story because it spawned on a competing forum. So there's a motivation to destroy the story to show that your board is the real conspiracy board. But there's also an incentive to make up the story to quote-unquote blow the whistle and have it done on your forum so that you get the extra hits, so that you get the prestige. But it's important to note that this information came out on a private network of people sharing this type of information first. I don't know, it's not quite clear. But once it went public, it caused a whole host of controversy in the conspiracy forum world. And also, you have to take what we know about disinformation into account, you know. Could this have been a paid shill trying to throw everyone off the track? Could it be a half-truth? You know, these are the questions you have to ask yourself. But never the fucking less, it is interesting. So who knows, people, but Len's book Project Serpo is very well reviewed, maintains a 4.5 on Amazon. 135 people can't be wrong, can they? But anyway, I always try to ask questions that a skeptic might ask, regardless of what I think, because I love to take someone from a no way is that possible to a well shit, maybe it is. And I tried to help Len make that case. You'll have to decide how we did. Apparently, the original messages from the anonymous source where all this comes from have enough technical information in them to make people much smarter than me find a reason to dig deeper and find them to be credible. As you'll hear, the story of the Yellow Book is probably the hardest pill to swallow. In fact, it's so wild that if this was a fake story, the trickster probably wouldn't even include such a fantastical chunk of information if they wanted their story to be believable. So either way, I suggest you get your head right, strap yourself in, and enjoy this ride. I'm going to remind the world about the money bomb again. Almost $1,000 handed out to date. We're preparing for the big 100th episode. I hope we can blow it out. We are close to 350 in donations right now, so I'll be giving away at least 125, which is solid. It's a solid base. That said, here are the details, and I'll be on the other side with the wild tale that is Project Serpo. Hey people, I gotta take a second to tell you about something we do around here called the THC Money Bomb. What I do is every 5 episodes, I total up the donations I've gotten in that period of time, and half keeps me and the show going. I take the other half and I gift that back to a random listener. So far we're hitting about 500 each round and I couldn't be happier about it. So consider throwing in 5 or 10 bucks. It's cheaper than a hand at the blackjack table with better odds than a scratch-off ticket. Plus, you know half supports a show you like, and at the very least, half will go to a like-minded person who could probably use a nice surprise in these troubled times. When you make a donation, I can see your email address, and that's how I pick the winner. But to keep things kosher, you can also get in the pool by sending your info on a postcard to me, Greg Carlwood, P.O. Box 635223, San Diego, California, 92163. I got no subscription fees here, no paid archives, no paid bonus shows, and I want to keep it that way, on principle. But I'm not a millionaire at the podcast on the side. This is it for me. And I'm the only one I know who's trying to help the people out as well.
My man.
So help me help you. If you want to play along, go to thehiresidechats.com/donate and get in the game. Dollars, bitcoins, it's all good to me. And that's what we call the THC Money Bomb. Boom. Well, folks, we've heard a lot of stories about human and alien integration before, with stories of secret underground bases, abductions, hybridization testing, and classified space programs. And today we're going to take a hard look at one of those stories in detail, a story that involves decades of ET contact and even a program to take human astronauts to the alien homeworld, a program called Project Serpo. Today's guest, Len Kasten, has written an extensive book called Appropriately, Secret Journey to Planet Serpo, A True Story of Interplanetary Travel, and has been researching the secret ET involvement in the human storyline for quite some time, much of which is documented in his previous book, The Secret History of Extraterrestrials. Len, welcome to the show.
Yeah, nice to be with you, Greg.
Yeah, man. I'm psyched about this story, although there is a lot of controversy over its validity. And I mean, you're going to get that with any story that involves aliens. It's undeniable that you'll have that. But I hope we can make a case for Project Serpo that the people find within the realm of possibility. So to start us off, let's talk about the source of the information. How did this story come about?
It started with a series of emails sent into an insider network, UFO network, of about 150 people, most of whom were ex-military and ex-intelligence people. So this was a high-level UFO network. They called it the UFO Thread List. And this series of emails was sent in from one of the members of the list, reporting on a program that took place in 1964 and 5, wherein we sent 12 Americans to a distant star system as part of an exchange program.
Right.
He was in a position to know because he was involved with the program many years ago. This series of emails took place in 2005, which was, so that was 40 years after the actual event. And apparently he was an older man by then, but when he was involved in the program, obviously he had been much younger. So that's how it all began.
Right. So he sends these anonymous emails. How many pages of information would you say he put out there?
Well, you know, the email became the website was created to house the emails eventually. And that email became fleshed out with a lot of other information from other people involved in the program who also chose to remain anonymous, but who were intimately involved with it. So at this point, it has something, it's still out there, by the way, and it still has about 13,000 words of information. So it's overwhelming, actually.
Yeah, so have there been any other, outside of anonymous and a few other anonymous sources, have there been any credible whistleblowers that we know of that have been able to confirm this information?
Well, all of whom have written into the website. And remained anonymous. But what's remarkable about it is that nobody of any note has come forward to discredit it or debunk it after, let's see, now it's been 9 years. This came in 2005. That was 9 years ago. So the information's been out there on the website for 9 years, and the important people have actually confirmed it. People like Rick Doty, who was in the Air Force Office of Special Investigation, had a lot of reasons to know what was going on. Whitley Strieber and many people of that ilk have more or less confirmed it or have not rebuked it.
Let's get into the actual story here. I mean, it's pretty fascinating stuff. This thing starts with Roswell, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Yes, Roswell.
Start us off there. What's the storyline?
Well, the Roswell crash. In the Roswell crash, five aliens died. Five bodies were found near the craft, but one survived. And that survived alien, the alien that survived, made all the difference in the world. And that's what began the whole Project Serpo saga. Because he was taken to Los Alamos and questioned there. We found a way to communicate with him. One person said they actually operated on his larynx to make him able to talk. But I don't think that's really what happened, because it wasn't really necessary. He was able to more or less pick up some English. And but he did speak in those tonal variations, very much like what was shown in Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Yeah, that's very strange. I've heard about there's the connection to Close Encounters. There's a lot of speculation that it possibly is inspired by the first visitation with the aliens that apparently came back after they had made contact with this one that had survived the crash at Roswell.
Well, the alien that survived the crash allowed us to get in communication with his planet. What happened was there was a communications device in the craft, which the scientists at Los Alamos had retrieved, but they couldn't get it to work, and he couldn't get it to work, until finally, 5 years later, after trying many things, one of the American scientists came up with the bright idea of simply bringing the device back to the crashed craft, which they had, and hooking it up to the power source there in the craft, and lo and behold, it worked.
Hmm.
What's interesting about that is that it wasn't the alien that conceived the idea, it was one of the Americans. In any case, communications began in 1952 with his home planet, and he sent six messages in quick succession to that planet, one of which suggested an exchange program. At whose authority that was made, I'm not sure.
So he sent six messages home. Were any of them messages to come and get him?
One of the messages was requesting a rescue operation. Yes, but apparently that was impossible at that time. However, that begins another story because, you know, it was clear to some of the scientists at Los Alamos that that tiny little craft probably didn't travel through interstellar space. It was just too small,
mm-hmm.
and too unequipped, and they assumed that there must be a mothership somewhere in the vicinity still. That turned out to be the case.
Really?
Yes, that turned out to be the case. Because in mid-1953, another craft didn't crash in Kingman, Arizona. It landed. And apparently that was part of the arrangement, that they would send another craft down, not to rescue the alien that had survived, but to give us as a gift a anti-gravity craft, circular disc, to use to reverse engineer and to make our own. And so in 1953, that craft was retrieved and was brought to the Nevada test site. There were four live aliens on the craft. They were also brought to Los Alamos. But eventually they were brought back to the Nevada test site so they could work with the scientists there. And that's all detailed in my chapter on Kingman.
Interesting. So this, I guess, would mark the first major encounter with an ET species for the American government, but there's also speculation that the Nazis had similar type craft and similar type beings helping them. Was this the same type of was this a different entity, or was this the same group of aliens?
Different. They were different.
Different group?
Yeah. These aliens were from Zeta Reticuli. It's my belief, and it's the belief of Anonymous, that the Greys, so-called Greys, are from Alpha Centauri. And they're totally different. Totally different species. I say totally because there's some similarities in terms of their physiology, but basically they're different. The aliens from Serpo are more human looking. They look like small people, actually. They have a brown complexion. They have five fingers and toes. Their eyes are a little larger, but not spectacularly larger like the Greys. And they're much easier to interact with.
Interesting.
They're also a very caring people, we discovered. And they've never, ever abducted any of our citizens.
So that's interesting. So
yeah.
This being, he lived in some military base for 5 years, and then it was not until 10 years later that the first meeting was arranged between the U.S. government and this alien race?
that's the case. In discussing this, why he would have made that suggestion for a exchange program 10 years out, the Americans were baffled. But before they could get it clarified, he died. He died in 1952, in the summer of 52. So they never understood why he had suggested 10 years down the road, which would have been 1962.
Yeah, but that is interesting. Maybe he thought we had a lot more work to do before we were worthy of that type of meeting. But do we know why he died? Was it just a natural kind of thing?
Apparently, yeah. I think probably more remarkable than anything that he survived for 5 years in such a different, possibly hostile environment as far as he was concerned.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was thinking. You go halfway around the world, and if you don't get a bunch of shots, you could be hit with some nasty disease. I can only imagine being from another galaxy, you'd think they'd have those same kind of concerns, like you can't eat an apple because it might kill you. You can't breathe the air. You can't be around a dog, maybe. Who knows? I mean, it seems like it'd be such a dangerous environment.
Exactly. They had him in a pretty contained environment in Los Alamos. I think they took as many steps as they could to keep him healthy and to keep him alive. But I think he just expired. And it's rather strange because on their planet, they lived to a much older age than we do. So, but on Earth, he wasn't able to live that long. I'm not sure how he died. Maybe he contracted something, a disease that couldn't be fixed. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Yeah. So, do we know? Obviously, they have some type of wormhole technology or some type of travel technology that we don't have or that we didn't have then. Who knows what we have now in the Black Projects? But how long does it take? Do we have any idea the travel distance between them and us? How long they can travel that many light years?
When we went to Serpo on their spacecraft, the trip took about 10 months.
We're
talking about 240 trillion miles, or 40 light years, 39.8 light years. So that means that they traveled at 40 times the speed of light.
Right. Interesting.
Evidently, what we learned was that they traveled through wormholes. And travel through a wormhole is instantaneous. It doesn't take time at all, because it's going through the time domain, apparently. So the 10-month period evidently was taken up with navigating, with stellar navigation, which they were had experts at that point. They had been developing this technology for 50,000 years of our years. So they knew how to navigate to and from and in and out of the wormholes. Once in the wormhole, it's like folding space. Their planet then essentially became much closer to ours, like space was folded over to the point where the two star systems were virtually side by side. That's mm-hmm. how it worked. And so it took 10 months. Now, when you add in the acceleration, the deceleration, navigation, apparently that's all taken up with the 10 months. I'm not sure. And also, they use a form of antimatter propulsion as well. Now, our people were able to travel, to walk around the ship. They were allowed to go into the engine room. They answered all the questions we had. So we picked up a lot of the information about that technology and about that propulsion.
Interesting. So they brought us a craft to reverse engineer. Tell me more about that first meeting. So the being dies, and then 10 years later, I guess during that 10 years, there was ongoing communication back and forth maintained?
Evidently, yeah. Evidently, but the fact that they had given us a craft to reverse engineer was kept very, very, very secret.
Mm-hmm.
Very high level, way above top secret, because we were back engineering that craft at the Nevada test site, and that's all in one of the appendices in my book, because the man who was involved in that gave a personal testimony about what went on there and how he was able to... He was in charge of building a simulator for our pilots they built a simulator that essentially simulated travel, a flight in the anti-gravity craft, and that was his job. And that's in the book.
Right. Also in the book, I was really surprised to see, apparently John F. Kennedy had knowledge of this SERPO project in this ongoing communication, correct?
Yeah, by the time they were ready, Kennedy was president, and he was briefed on the exchange program. And he had the option of saying yes or no, and he said yes. He was absolutely committed to any triumphs he could that could be made in space.
Mm-hmm.
Going to the moon, whatever, that was what he called the new frontier. And he worked with von Braun on this whole thing. But he had absolutely no knowledge, from what I could determine in my research, he had absolutely no knowledge of what went on after Kingman and in the reverse engineering of the craft. He did not know about that.
Interesting.
So as far as he was concerned, they had proposed an exchange program. He agreed to the exchange program, and he said, go forward with it. And that's how that triggered the entire operation.
Now, he was assassinated before the visitation, right? It was like 5 months before, right?
That's right, yeah.
Oh, man. Such a bummer. The whole world could have been way different.
Exactly, because probably knowing his dedication to transparency, he probably was going to have it videoed, have it televised. And that would be my guess anyway. I don't have any knowledge or information about that, but knowing Kennedy as we do, the way he detested secrecy, government secrecy, that would have been a logical thing for him to do.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about how different things could have been. Now let's go to that first meeting. Kennedy's assassinated 5 months later. This first meeting happens with the Eben. They're called the Eben, right?
Well, one of the scientists at Los Alamos came up with that because it's a short form of extraterrestrial biological entity. So that became Eben, and they became labeled with the term Eben. That was our term for them. They became the Evens.
Okay, so that first meeting, what was that like?
That first meeting, meaning the first landing?
Yeah, the first landing. They came in, we had a bit, they came and got their bodies, I understand. And there were a few other interesting details to that first meeting.
We had the 12 Americans ready to board the craft in April of 1964. They were sitting on a bus outside of Holloman Air Force Base. That's where the first landing took place, was at Holloman in New Mexico. But when they arrived, they decided they did not want to take our people with them at that particular time. And they said they would come back in a year, in July of 65, for the exchange program. So in that first meeting, it was more or less of a ceremonial meeting. They gave us a very incredible gift at that point called the Yellow Book.
Right. Tell us about the Yellow Book.
Well, the Yellow Book was it was really like a block, more like a block, a plastic block or something. It wasn't really a book, but it was about the size of a book. And when it was opened, scenes appeared from the distant past all the way up to the present, going way back to the way our planet evolved and the way our species evolved. They had all that information in pictorial form. So it was like reliving it when you opened the book. And there was text, or there were words accompanying the pictures, and the words were in the language that you, the reader, spoke.
So, wow.
So apparently it had the ability to pick up from your thoughts or from your aura or whatever, your language, and then it would speak to you in that language.
See, now the Yellow Book is fascinating to me. What kind of details did Anonymous give on the content of this Yellow Book? Because obviously our history is very skewed. It's been manipulated. There are a lot of unanswered questions. Did he elaborate on humanity's history and some of those areas of the unknown?
Yeah, of course, and that's all in what's called the debriefing book. When the seven Americans returned in 1978, only seven came back, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
They were debriefed for a solid year by the DIA and by the Air Force Office of Special Investigation. And they were kept isolated for that period of time. That resulted in a 3,000-page book. So all of the information that you're asking, all the questions you're asking, are answered in that book. And Anonymous had access to that book.
Wow.
But we don't have all the details, naturally, 3,000 pages, but we have enough to produce those emails that he sent into the website.
Yeah. I mean, can you share anything about the contents of that history? I mean, did anybody go back and look at who built the pyramids or check the validity of Atlantis or, you know, watch the dinosaurs get wiped out by an asteroid, anything like that?
According to Anonymous, the way you read the book was once you started reading it, you could not put it down and pick up where you left off. You'd have to start all over again. That's the way it worked.
Really? So that sounds odd.
Yeah, exactly. He said that he spent 22 hours reading it, and he didn't get very far. So beyond that, I don't have any more information, except he said the aliens did speak about Jesus. Whether or not they were taking credit for Jesus, I don't know. He intimated that there was that element where they claimed to have been involved in that. If that's the case, it could have been disinformation. I don't know.
Right. I saw that insinuation that Jesus was possibly one of them, you know, a teacher of his time. And also there's the, you know, like the point you made, it could have been manipulation to try to maybe get something out of us at the time. So we were manipulated with this false story. I mean, our leaders do it to us. I could see them doing it to us as well.
Yeah, and if you go to the Billy Myers story, where the book, the so-called Talmud of Emmanuel, was unearthed, that book supposedly came from the Pleiadians, and they say that Jesus was an extraterrestrial, but not from that particular planet.
Interesting.
He was from a different star system.
So have any other whistleblowers from any other areas of ufology or black ops ever mentioned the Yellow Book before this story?
Not to my knowledge. I've never heard it discussed before, but Rick Doty didn't deny it, and Willie Strieber seemed to think it was all very likely or possible in his interview with George Noory. Strieber, Bill Ryan, who was the moderator of the website, www.serpo.org, and Rick Doty were all on together in December of 2005. Remember, the information was revealed in November, so this was a month after the revelation, and none of the three really debunked it or denied it. In fact, the fact that Doty did not deny it and had the opportunity, I think, is the most significant of all. And Strieber had an interesting encounter with some people at one of the UFO congresses that he believed tied it to the Serpo story.
Wow. Were they just had knowledge of it as well?
Well, they just related that particular incident. He just related that particular incident and took the position that it could have easily have happened. That it was a very likely story.
Gotcha.
I think the attitude he took.
So we have this first meeting. The aliens give us the Yellow Book. We are ready to send these astronauts with them. They say, no, we're not going to do that right now. Then what happens?
Yeah, at that particular meeting, they had the bodies of 10 dead aliens. They took them back. Several of them had been autopsied, which they probably did not surprise them at all. And that's what happened at that particular meeting. It was a ceremonial encounter. We had 16 people there waiting for them when they landed. And it's my belief that President Johnson was not among them. However, some high-ranking intelligence operatives and military people probably were. So that's what happened in April of 1964 at Holloman Air Force Base. By the way, the very first contact when they got into our atmosphere was that they had misplaced the landing zone by about 100 miles or so. And interestingly, there was a sighting of a craft that looked like the one that apparently they sent by Lonnie Zamora near Socorro at exactly that time.
Now that's good. That's good to hear.
That's quite interesting. And the Zamora case, I think, confirms that meeting. So it's something that your listeners can look into.
Yeah, because, I mean, this is such a far-out, wild ride, but I want it to be real, you know. I want to believe. So I'd love to hear those corroborating little pieces of evidence that kind of tie this all together. So they make a second trip out, and this time they do take astronauts with them, correct?
Yeah, they said they would be back in 1965 in July, and to pick up our people. And so this caused a tremendous inconvenience, logistical nightmare, actually. They had 90,000 pounds of equipment waiting to load onto the alien craft. And the 12 Americans were sitting in a bus waiting to get on. So all that had to be postponed. I don't want to call them astronauts because they really were not astronauts. These were not NASA-type people. They were simply military people that had special training.
Gotcha.
They were sent back to Leavenworth Prison in Kansas because they did not want them associating with anybody for that whole year until the pickup. So they were kept as literally as virtual prisoners at Leavenworth for that whole year.
So now 12 people went with them to Serpo?
That's right. 7 came back.
Okay. So do we know what happened to those other people, the ones that didn't come back? I know one died in transit on the way there.
That's right.
What about the rest of them?
2 died on Serpo in about the third year. They were originally scheduled to be there for 10 years. Around the third year, two more people died. And then when the time came to return, only 7 wanted to return. 2 wanted to remain there. So 2 remained, and 3 died, 7 came back.
Nice. So, and the second half of your book is filled with excerpts from the journal of one of the military people who was sent to Serpo, and it is so interesting to read through. Let's go through a little bit of that. Like, what can we tell the people about Planet Serpo from those 13 years they were there? What do we know about the ecology of the planet? Anything about the planet, geography, environment?
Planet have 2 suns. The Zeta Reticuli star system is a binary star system. Supposedly, our astronomers tell us that the 2 suns are very far apart and probably would not appear in the sky at the same time. However, they reported that they were in the sky at the same time, and therefore it never really got dark on Serpo. It would get down to like a twilight point, but never dark, because one of the suns would always be in the sky. Apparently, what we found out was that Serpo was the 4th planet in from that one of those suns, which was very similar in size to our sun, and it revolved around that sun. It did not do a serpentine revolution about both suns. So the sun it did not revolve around was always in the sky, but the other one was they revolved around that very much like we revolve around our sun.
Interesting.
So it was constant day. It was constant daylight there.
And in terms of the actual planet, was it very Earth-like?
Yeah, it was about the same size as Earth, but the same virtual weight, or in terms of kilograms, they estimated. It had a lot of similarities. The atmosphere was very breathable, but it was very hot. When they landed there, it was 107 degrees. But they gave them a place to stay underground so that it was cooler down there, and that helped a lot.
Hmm.
Apparently, the Ebens thrive in a much hotter environment than we do. Their skin and their whole biochemistry is different than ours, and they like to be in a hot place.
Now, did Anonymous say anything to the effect of who exactly we were dealing with? Because obviously the people from Serpo are dealing with just the United States or one country. They're not dealing with the planet Earth as a whole. Were we dealing with a unified planet or just a certain geographical area of that planet?
No, we were dealing with the entire planet.
So they operate as a single species. They've reached that level.
That's right. Yeah, they're very organized that way. They're very well controlled, and we found out that it was more or less a police state.
Right.
We're very regimented.
I saw that in the book and thought that was pretty interesting. Are we talking about a police state the way we see it? Like, very authoritative? Was there any sign of the people wanting to rebel against that police state or any kind of oppression? Or was it a fairer society type situation?
Well, if you want to, if you want to call lack of freedom oppression, then yes, it would have to be, because they were closely monitored. What they did, everything they did, wherever they went, they were watched. They had to wear a device on their belt so that they were known, very similar to what we're doing now, actually, with the smartphones. And they were required to do certain jobs at certain times of the day. And this was all determined by what they call the mirror tower, that as the planet revolved around the sun, the projections of the mirror tower onto the ground would trigger a whole new type of activity, and they would shift into a different activity based on the movements of that tower, that mirror tower, and also the commands, whatever commands may have come through that device that they all wore on their belts. And we were given those devices to wear on our belts, too. So we had to wear them, too.
Fascinating.
That way they always knew where we were.
Right. Yeah, that sounds like a police state to me. So
yeah.
How about animals on this planet? Of course, we're dealing with an intelligent species, but do we see anything else from their environment, any biological creatures other than them?
Yeah, there were some different kinds of animals that they were described by the commander in his diary. Something that looked like a very large snake, but it had almost like human eyes. There were several different creatures. Yes, there was one that sort of looked like a lion, but it had a lot of fur around its face. That's all in the book, but he discusses that in his diary.
Right.
But he didn't spend a lot of time on that. The major thing in the diary was the confrontation that took place over the body of 308.
Yes.
They were all given three-digit numbers. They were no longer referred to by names, by the way, 12 people.
Yeah, you have a chapter on that confrontation. Tell us about that. What's the story there?
Well, 308 was one of the pilots in the 12, group of 12, and he died on the way to Serpo. And the commander wanted to know what happened to his body, and they said that his body no longer was there. And he said, why not? He said, the body belongs to us. They said, well, it's not available anymore. Well, he pursued that, and it turned out that they had taken the parts of the body and used it to clone and to create other creatures. And the fact that they would not release the body caused the commander to confront the doctor and ask him why they couldn't get the remains of 308. Finally, they relented and let us see their biological or their biotechnology laboratory, in which they used parts of creatures from many, many other planets that they had visited to create hybrid creatures, and some of them were monsters. And the commander said that he used the word hideous.
Damn. Yeah, I definitely read through that part. That was pretty crazy. He said one of them looked like a porcupine, one of them looked like some crazy beast.
Yeah, exactly. And it disgusted him, revolted him. And his final statement was, "I have seen the dark side of this civilization." But, you know, what he is calling the dark side and what he's calling evil is just a lack of understanding of the science that they were involved in.
Mm-hmm.
To them, I think it was all just experimentation, biotechnology.
Right.
It is true that probably a lot of these creatures were being treated with cruelty. So, you know, in a way, he was right.
Now, did he say anything about their planet in terms of having overpopulation or a lot of pollution? Like, have they overrun their environment, or did they have a lot of uninhabited space?
Yeah, a lot of uninhabited space. There were only 650,000 Ebens. Most of them lived around the central portion, like the equator, where it was hot. And what happened was they found out that in their history they had been involved in a 100-year war with another civilization. And evidently there had been a lot of fatalities, and that may have been the reason why their population was so small. Ultimately, they prevailed using particle beam weapons. So they may have been a much larger population that just got wiped out in that war.
Yeah.
Now this particular planet that they called Serpo was not their native planet. They had come from a different planet about 5,000 years previously, which had been destroyed by volcanic eruptions. Hmm. So they had moved, or they were all refugees, essentially, from their original home.
Well, one thing I also saw in the book that I thought was interesting about their society is that they didn't use any money.
That's right, no money. They had huge warehouses, and anytime anybody wanted anything, they just went and got it.
Now, I don't know if you're familiar with the idea of Jacques Fresco's Venus Project, but this sounds almost like the same society that he's proposing that we take up here, a resource-based economy where basically all objects, all material goods are in like a library system, and you can check them out whenever you need, just like a warehouse like you're talking about. No money, autonomous control. Sounds very similar. It's odd.
And who said that again? Say that again?
Jacques Fresco. I'll send you a link when we're done.
Yeah, please do. And did he write a book as well?
He actually did. He wrote a book called The Best That Money Can't Buy. And it's a book about how most of our problems are caused by a monetary system. And if we're ever going to work together and not be in conflict with other islands on the same round planet, then we're going to need to get over the monetary system.
So. Yeah, it makes sense. It makes absolute sense. I mean, the Ebens have it worked out, and they're not even concerned about material goods. When they need anything or when they need food, it's all there.
Right. So in those terms, it doesn't seem so much like a police state, or at least not in the terms that we would think about it. It seems like more of just a cohesive unit working with, obviously, some type of hierarchy, but it doesn't seem to be necessarily super abusive to the people. It seems to be somewhat beneficial for them.
They're all taken care of. Let's put it that way. You get into the philosophical questions of what is freedom worth?
Okay? Right. There's a fine line.
Exactly. And if freedom degenerates into cannibalistic capitalism, to the point where people are just ravenously taking what they want from others, because, you know, people who get too very rich are taking it away from somebody who's poor.
Let's face it.
Freedom is the key. We supposedly have perfect freedom, but then that's questionable too. Do we really? If we're manipulated by lack of material possessions or food or whatever, are we really free? You get into those kinds of discussions, you know?
Yeah, 99 problems, my man. I hear you. So these astronauts, or these not astronauts, but these military people, these military scientists, these adventurers that went to SERPO, they were there for 13 years. Now, the journals that were delivered from Anonymous, they're just the journals of one of these people, correct?
Yeah, the team commander.
Do we know anything about any of the other ones? I mean, of course, it seems like time-wise, they'd probably all be dead by this time, correct?
Yeah, the last one died in 2002 in Florida.
Interesting. Yeah. So we don't have no records of anything left by any of the other people have been disclosed through Anonymous.
That's right. Just what's on the website, www.serpo.org.
Now, how about photographs?
They took thousands of photographs and videos, all of which are stored at the Bowling Air Force Base in Washington, at the DIA headquarters. So there are 3,000 photographs there. There are soil samples. There are cassette recordings, because they were able to use cassettes in the 60s. They had that technology. So it's all there. You know, it's a question of getting the Freedom of Information Act to try and pry it out of there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be great to do. I would love to see that happen. But apparently a lot of people on this planet ended up knowing about these meetings. I mean, we shared this information with Russia and China and the Vatican. I mean, even Carl Sagan seemed to have gotten filled in on the situation.
Exactly. Yeah. he was recruited to do the scientific analysis, the astronomy, and he supposedly wrote a 60-page opinion on the fact that their rotational computations did not seem to work out to be in accord with the Kepler formulas, that gravitation was different in that particular solar system, which he admitted to reluctantly finally at the end. But he did sign his name to the report. And so that also is in the vaults at Bowling Air Force Base, his connection with it. But he did later write the book Contact.
Right.
He was not willing to come out and admit that he'd been involved in that operation, because it would have endangered his position at Cornell, in the Cornell astronomy labs there. He was the director. NASA might have stopped giving them money. He had to walk a fine line, and he did it, I think, through fiction, by writing the book Contact, which was made into a movie, as you know, with Jodie Foster and Matthew McConaughey.
So outside of the confrontation over one of the human bodies, I mean, 13 years is a long time. What did they spend their time doing? Did they just integrate into society? Did they just study with these Ebon scientists?
They had an agenda. The agenda was given to them by our people at Los Alamos. They kept it very military. In the early stages, they saluted each other as they passed. They stopped doing that after a while. After about the sixth year, I believe, they were finally given a community of their own in the northern quadrant, which was much cooler. And they didn't have to live in that heat anymore. From the way the commander described it, it was similar to the climate of Montana. And had the same kind of foliage, same type of environment.
Evergreen trees and stuff.
Evergreen
like that.
Trees, yeah, exactly. So they must have lived a relatively pleasant 7 years after that, because they were ensconced in a much more comfortable environment, and nobody really was supervising them. So, it's, you know, sounded to me like an extended vacation, really,
right,
at that point.
So they weren't really living in secret on Serpo. It wasn't weird to the inhabitants of Serpo to have beings from another planet, because obviously that wasn't even their home planet. So I guess they were just living among them.
Exactly, and they were free to move around any way they wanted. And they had the use of an aircraft that are very much similar to our helicopters, although they didn't have blades, but they were anti-gravity, and they could use that, and they could go wherever they wanted, explore the planet. And but they did have their own agenda. I'm not sure what it was in terms of bringing back information. This was an incredible insight into the rest of the universe, and I'm sure they took advantage of whatever information they could gather.
Right. Yeah, this seems like potentially the smoking gun if we could really get to all that data. It's like so frustrating that we can't.
I know. If we could get that data, incredible things would open up. Incredible things would open up. Absolutely. So it's sitting there. It's sitting there, and why they are keeping it under wraps at this point, 50 years later, I don't know. I mean, so many good things could come out of it.
And I mean, you've combed through all these leaked journals. Outside of what we've discussed, did you read anything in them that really stood out to you?
Well, you know, to tell you the truth, one would expect to be on another planet. One would expect to see beautiful cities and all kinds of incredible futuristic developments. This was kind of a dull place, and it's not a kind of place that I would want to ever even visit. You know, so and while the Ebens were nice people and they treated us beautifully, they weren't especially interesting. They had strange customs in terms of dancing and so forth, and they didn't seem to have any culture the way we have culture. Libraries, museums, you know, all of that seemed to be missing. So yeah, we were dealing with kind of a, I don't know how to describe it really. It goes way beyond 1984.
Just a cold scientific community that doesn't really have any art.
They lived in adobe type, very small huts. They weren't huts. They were houses, and they were allowed to have one child, and no more than one child. They were assigned to certain tasks based on their education, and that became their lifelong job. So, you know, it wasn't to me the kind of place that we would envision a distant star system.
And one other thing I thought that was pretty interesting, they talked about how often they had visited Earth. They said they've been visiting Earth since before we were civilized, this race has, correct?
Yeah, exactly. And that's why they spoke of Jesus, and they spoke of a lot of other developments on our planet that they knew about. But the interesting thing is that they were surveilling, or I should say they were looking at our most sensitive military installation. The crash over Roswell was a crash over the 509th bomb group, which was the atomic bomb group. So the question becomes, well, now that then we found out that they had won a 100-year war, they had the ability, if they wanted to militarily speaking, to take over this planet, technology-wise. And that's why there was such panic at the Pentagon over the Roswell crash. That's the reason. And Philip Corso talked about that in his book, The Day After Roswell. Their initial reaction to Roswell was that we were in danger of being invaded. So fortunately, they turned out to be nice people, civilized people, and we did expose all of our information to several other countries, including China, Russia, the Vatican. Many departments of our government were present at succeeding meetings. The last meeting took place in 2010 in mid-Pacific on what's called Johnston Island, although it's really not an island so much as it is an atoll. And so, you know, a lot of governments around the world know all about the events.
Mm-hmm.
That includes Russia. So if Putin must know about it, and certainly the Chinese know about it, so It's no longer a great secret. We were not, but we apparently have become their representatives here, and they deal with us mainly.
Yeah, it's interesting that all these governments would know about this and still not be motivated to get us to a place where we're operating as a single unit, as a world, as the Earth. You know, when they know that they're making contact with another species, you think that would be a motivating factor and be like, hey, we should probably get our shit together so we can like enter the global marketplace or whatever, the galactic marketplace.
Yeah, it raises all those questions of if we have freely shared this information with other nations and they know all these fantastic things just as we do, you'd think there would be some sort of a worldwide movement in terms of a diplomatic relationship with this planet and all the other planets that they have visited. Don't forget, they've been roaming the galaxy for 50,000 years. Can you imagine what they know?
Yeah. They probably know all kinds of things, but that brings up another interesting point, as I've been interested in Roswell since I was a kid, but I've always wondered how a spaceship could navigate a wormhole, and you know, this race could be traveling for tens of thousands of years around the universe and then crash in the Arizona desert.
It's an amazing story. Yeah, absolutely. Who knows? Maybe they crash on other planets as well. Their technology is not perfect.
Right.
And apparently the radar, it was a very powerful radar around Roswell Air Base that caused the crash, but some think it was the lightning storm that was taking place at that time. In any case, the two of their craft collided, and one ended up near Roswell and one ended up further west in the plains of St. Augustine. And we eventually recovered the remains of that craft as well. And according to the briefing that was given to President Reagan, both ships were the same design and the aliens were exactly the same. So what happened was two of their craft collided. And that can happen.
It can.
Yeah.
So we got a couple minutes left. I really want to know more about this anonymous guy because he is the crutch that this all leans on. There is an interesting anecdote. He told us that he was the editor of something called the Red Book. Can you tell us about that and how he was involved with it?
He claimed that the Red Book is a complete compendium of all of our contacts with ET, different ET races. And in his release to the website, he said that we had contact with nine races altogether, including the Evens. And some of the life forms that we have dealt with, he claimed, were actually not completely biological. They were part automaton, but they were able to make decisions. So he talks about that. That's all in my book. And it was his job as the editor of the Red Book to brief sitting presidents on updating them on our contact with ETs, both ours and around the world. And that's known as the Red Book. And as the editor of the Red Book, and as the man who briefs sitting presidents, you've got to believe that he's way up there in the intelligence hierarchy. And my own guess is that he was probably on MJ-12.
Ah, yeah. See, he must have been up there. It seems like he's disclosed a lot of information about himself that would make it easy for high-ranking people to figure out who he was. Because there can't be that many people who edited the Red Book and briefed presidents.
Exactly. And I think Rick Doty knows who he was. And Rick Doty has made some statements that make me think that he does know who he was, or he has a very good guess as to who he was. But he's actually still alive. His last entry into the website was in 2012. So he's still around.
What did he say in his last entry? Was it still just more journals?
No, it was some very interesting information about, I'm trying to remember what it was. You have to take a look. I can't recall. It was something he wanted to communicate.
Sure.
Yeah, I can't remember. Yeah, there's a lot of information on the website, and your listeners are encouraged to go out there and take a look at it. It's www.serpo.org. It's still out there.
Of course. So when you first heard about this story, were you skeptical of it? I assume you'd have to be.
I was sitting in a shuttle bus from Laughlin, Nevada to Nevada, the Nevada airport, to the Las Vegas airport with Bill Ryan, who was the moderator of the website and who created the website. So I had 2 hours of exposure to the whole story, and Donald Ware was in that particular shuttle too, and he contributed some information. And, you know, I think you know who Donald Ware is, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's well known, and he's high up there in the intelligence apparatus. So when Ware seemed to go along with it, and Ryan gave so much information, I began to understand that this was a true story, and I wanted to look further into it.
Yeah, it's definitely fascinating. Are there any other points you would make to skeptics who might be out there shaking their head right now, thinking that there's no way this could be true? Are there any other points you would make that would make the story seem more credible? How can we reach those skeptical people?
Well, you know, President Kennedy was dedicated to government transparency. So it was the fact that he gave this whole operation to the DIA and not the CIA that made this revelation possible. We never would have learned about it if it had probably stayed in the hands of the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
So here it is, 50 years later, after the fact. They're sitting on top of incredible technology there. The only point I would like to make is that I think it's time that the planet was able to start making use of this technology, curing illnesses, curing diseases that they had probably already worked on, and using free energy, all these things that are being kept under wraps. I think the time has come. You know, we have to move into a whole another level.
Absolutely.
That's my only point. That's the point I'd like to make at this point.
Yeah, man. They say it's the age of awakening. Well, right on, Len. It has been a great time to Planet Serpo and back again. A wild, far-out ride. I appreciate you laying all this out for the people in your book and coming on the Higher Side Chats to talk to me about it. Do you want to tell the people about your website or your next big project before we let you go?
I don't have a next big project, but my website is www.et-secrethistory.com, and I keep it updated with a lot of interesting information. And they can also order both of my books through the website.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Len. It's been a real trip. Take care of yourself.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. I think you've done a very good job in terms of getting to the major points here. I appreciate it.
Thanks. Wow, people. There it is, Project Serpo. I just don't know. I don't even know what to think. I definitely have questions. I mean, why so many years in between the certain steps of the process? Why did the alien race let their fallen comrade spend 5 years and then die on an alien world when apparently they could have brought him home so easily? Yeah, I don't know. It is far out, but I can't say anything really. I mean, 13,000 pages. That's a lot of pages, guys. A lot of documents. But either way, I hope we got your blood moving, guys. And I hope you found it to be an interesting conversation. So please share the show if you can. Support me in any way. Conspiracies, if you're into conspiracy-themed t-shirts, I've got some over at conspiracies.net. Of course, the money bomb is kind of my focus now. And actually, I should mention that my birthday is coming up on the 25th. I'm trying to coordinate that with our 100th episode. And some people have asked me if there's a way to donate or help me out without contributing to the money bomb. And I've said, no, there really isn't, because I just don't separate donations that way. So this does open the door for someone who wants to make a direct contribution to me and wants the rest of the listeners to just fuck off. But no, I have an Amazon wish list. It's full of equipment that would make the show a little better, a little higher quality, a little smoother, and health stuff, random alternative health type stuff and supplements that I've heard about that I've wanted to try but haven't wanted to spend the money on. So the Amazon wish list is just those things primarily. So if you want to help me out, get me a little birthday present. Most of my friends and family have abandoned me as I've traveled down into the fringes of conspiracy and paranormal material. And so it would be nice to have somebody make up for that massive, massive void in my life. Anyway, thanks, guys. I'm going to get out of here. It has been quite a journey. Your move, Serponians.
That boy needs therapy.
Psychosomatic.
That boy needs therapy.
Purely psychosomatic.
That boy needs therapy.
Lying down on the couch.
What does that mean?
You're a nut. You're crazy in the coconut.
What does that mean?
That boy needs therapy.
I'm gonna kill you.
That boy needs therapy.
Granny Gazoo, let's have a chew. I wanna count three.
That boy needs therapy.
He was white as a sheep.
And he also made false teeth.
Business continues below.
Did I ever tell you the story about
cowboys
and midgets
and Indians
and frontier psychiatrists?
I felt strangely hypnotized.
I was in another world.
The world of 20,000 girls
and milk and rectangles.
Do an optometrist.
A man with a golden eyeball.
And tighten your buttocks.
Pour juice on your chin.
And I promised my girlfriend I'd
put the violin.
Frontier Psychiatry.
Let's have a chew. I want to count three.
That boy needs therapy.
He was white as a sheep.
And he also made false teeth.
Other than a person.
A bird?
Yeah.
Sometimes a parrot talks. Funny when they talk. Can you think of anything else?